So I'm going to talk finally about a research project that I conducted that was part of a Research and Training Center grant that we had a few years ago. Actually, the grant was implemented right in the middle of Obamacare being implemented. So, but we started out with something that was really pre-Obamacare and pre the focus on healthcare integration, health and mental health care integration. And it was a long and very well implemented study. Anyway, so this is really just a reiteration of everything we've talked about this morning, which is that there's a health crisis, really, among individuals with severe psychiatric disabilities. Some of the latest data say mortality rates 2 to 3 times the general population with all these diseases that we've been mentioning. Lifestyle issues such as substance abuse, smoking, also compounding the problem. And then this issue of healthcare utilization. Do people with severe mental illness use more healthcare? Do they use less healthcare? It seems to be a little bit controversial depending on which healthcare you're talking about. Some people argue that individuals with psychiatric disabilities use emergency rooms too much and not in an appropriate way, and they underutilize preventive care. And part of this project was really designed to address those issues. So here's a list of some probable determinants of poor physical health care in this population, or really in general. The ones that are italicized are the ones that we thought we could affect with this intervention that I'm going to describe. So this idea of that one cannot control one's own health, a low level of internality or locus of control, lifestyle factors, smoking, poor diet, and sedentary lifestyle. The next three we did not attempt to really address directly, and that's risk-taking factors, illness-related factors, and environmental factors. And the last one, limited access to healthcare, we attempted to solve with this intervention. So the rationale for the study, of course, is this idea that interaction between physical and psychiatric health status is really critical, and that there's a bidirectional influence, and we can't forget that. How you feel physically affects your mental health, and your mental health, often, especially among individuals with severe mental illness, affects your physical health. And so we have to really be mindful of the fact that a holistic approach is necessary. We really feel that recovery from mental illness may be negatively affected by poor health because there's kind of an upper limit to what you can achieve in your mental health recovery if you're being bogged down by lots of physical problems. And at the point that we started this study and designed it, we saw a few successful holistic models of integrated care. And this idea of intersection that you mentioned, Lisa, was something that was really critical. Can we get a primary care doctor to really address mental health issues? Most of the time, they really don't want to deal with that. So we saw this as one way of dealing with that intersection issue. So the study was designed as a mixed method study, primarily a randomized trial carried out at 3 large mental health centers in the greater Boston area. We enrolled 200 individuals in the study. The experimental intervention was designed to address an array of comorbidities using a nurse practitioner in Massachusetts. It's not an advanced nurse, it's called a nurse practitioner, and that individual is licensed to provide care under the supervision of a physician, however. They can't completely independently prescribe and treat. But we wanted a nurse practitioner for a lot of reasons. Number one, we knew we couldn't get a primary care doc to do the kinds of things we wanted. We wanted that person to be stationed in the mental health center. And we knew that that was probably likely to happen with a nurse practitioner, but they are also in short supply in Massachusetts. And so that it was not easy to find a nurse practitioner who was willing to do this. Many nurse practitioners do not want to work with people who have severe mental illnesses, and so that was another problem. The other thing that we did to make this a mixed method study was not just focus on the physical outcomes, but really we wanted to listen to what people had to say about their care and how this nurse practitioner was helpful or not for them. So we had a small qualitative study that I'm going to describe. So this is how we conceived the nurse practitioner intervention, for better or for worse. We did not make it focused on one condition, like diabetes or high blood pressure. In retrospect, now that the study is over, that would have been a cleaner thing to do. But we were collaborating with a mental health provider who said, we have an array of conditions and comorbidities, and we need an approach that can address all of them. So we thought about healthcare as a puzzle, which is why I have this little picture of a puzzle in the upper right-hand corner. And everybody is missing different pieces of that puzzle. For individuals who are coming to these clinics, some of them could be missing one simple thing, like dental care, that they couldn't get. But many of them were missing multiple pieces. And so we saw this nurse practitioner as really being able to plug in those pieces for an individual. So it had to be very individualized, and the interventions, therefore, had to be very individualized. So the nurse practitioner had to be in the mental health setting, so the person did not have to travel somewhere else. They could combine this with their routine mental health appointments. We had to appoint the facilities with fully licensed examination rooms and equipment, which is no small feat. We had to raise money in order to do that, because in order to be licensed, several things were necessary and they were quite expensive. And most importantly, we had to open the communication with mental health providers. So there were no confidentiality issues to deal with, no issues around having to, do releases of information. They were right there and they were able to communicate seamlessly, which was really critical. And so what the nurse practitioner was designed to do was to assess the individual healthcare needs of the mental health client, those puzzle pieces that were missing, plan and treat and coordinate existing primary care. So as people came into the study, they were told, if you have a doc that you like, fine. We're just here to help fill out what you may not have, and we will coordinate with your doctor. So the nurse practitioner not only assessed those primary healthcare needs, but specifically inquired about, are there things about your physical health that are affecting your mental health and vice versa, that it could include medication side effects or things, physical conditions that seem to arise as a result of the medications that the person was on, and to specifically try to address those issues. The nurse practitioner was also supposed to focus on health and wellness and modifiable lifestyle factors like nutrition and exercise. For the control folks, we wanted to offer something, so everyone was actually both experimental and control, but it was primarily the control folks who took advantage of these educational seminars. So once a month, they were offered a one-hour session on things that we deemed to be critical to the healthcare of all individuals with psychiatric disabilities. The issues around feet were critical, sleeping, blood pressure checks, flu shots, dental care. We got local companies to provide us with money to give out, say, dental cleaning kits and things like that. So that was very well received, actually, those wellness days. We looked at things like the SF-36, the quality of primary health care, health beliefs, the health locus of control, similar to your study, Lisa, the multidimensional health locus of control, a very long instrument that measured a wide array of psychiatric symptoms and functioning. We looked at some service utilization costs 4 times over a year. One thing to note that's very different in the studies that you describe and what I'm describing is we decided not to measure physical parameters. We were really more interested in self-perceived health and wellness and whether the person was engaging in nutrition and good nutritional practices and exercise. But we did not test blood. We did not test blood pressure, for example, as a result of the study. These are individuals that are very similar to the kinds of folks that we see in a lot of our study, mean age of about 45, many individuals with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, etc. A good percentage living alone, virtually everyone on disability, only 12% had any earnings at all from work, and most of those were very small, and 95% taking psychotropic meds. Primarily female, Caucasian, although we did work in one mental health clinic that was focused in a Latino community and did translate materials and have a nurse practitioner who was able to deliver services in Spanish. 63% of the sample reported being smokers, and 27 said that they were physically inactive. And at baseline, most viewed their health as fair to poor, or a good percentage viewed their health as fair to poor. And this next statistic was a little bit of a surprise, although it didn't surprise the nurse practitioner, is that bodily pain seems to be something that individuals are dealing with a lot, and lots of complaints about pain interfering with their social and work lives and so forth. But this is the other surprise. In Massachusetts, 93% of the individuals had seen a primary care doctor, which flew in the face of all the other data that we were looking at. So as you may know, if you're from Massachusetts, or you may know anyway, Massachusetts was kind of on the forefront of getting more universal health care, the Romney Care package that he's been trying to deny. But anyway, it was under Romney's watch that we got expanded coverage. And so this really came as a surprise. People were able to see a primary care doc. So that nurse practitioner didn't have to replace the doctor. She just had to figure out what was missing from that puzzle. The disappointing thing for us is that despite people being screened in and saying, yes, I want to work with the nurse practitioner, I can see the value. We tried to explain what the nurse practitioner would do. Only half saw the nurse practitioner 1 to 3 times. So we had very low uptake of the intervention, and we couldn't force people. It was a voluntary intervention, and they were free to do whatever they wanted to do in terms of the nurse practitioner. We really strongly encouraged them to go once, and then once again, and then after that, we really had to make it the individual's choice. So I have no doubt that if we had had a stronger uptake or engagement in the intervention, we would have seen stronger findings. But as it was, we saw lots of positive trends, but not a lot of statistically significant differences. We did see that individuals who really engaged with the nurse practitioner did report improved physical and mental health and social functioning for the first 6 months of the intervention, and that's usually where the uptake occurred, and then it leveled off. So that was not a surprise. More physical, a trend for improvement in self-reported physical health among those seeing the nurse practitioner frequently, and greater access to primary care at the 12-month mark. So individuals were asked questions in the primary care assessment tool that said, you know, do you feel like you're able to get a doctor's appointment when you want? If you have an emergency, can you see someone? And so this improved with having the nurse practitioner present. Also, a somewhat greater internal locus of control, which was good. This is what we wanted to see, that people say, yes, I can have an effect on my health. My health is not determined by those powerful others out there or by chance. I really have some control over my health. And also believing that doctors and healthcare professionals can do something to help them. And also to take their health problems seriously. So there was one question that I even hesitated to ask as a researcher. So do you think in the next 7 years you may die of this disease, that disease? It's like, whoa, do I really want to ask that question? But on the other hand, being serious about your health situation, if you're a smoker, yes, then maybe the answer is I might die in the next 7 years if I don't do something about it. So it's kind of a balancing act between feeling optimistic but also recognizing that you have some serious problems. The good news is that for the entire sample, and that's the control in the experimental group, they got better over time in terms of depression and suicidality in particular. We were able to look at healthcare costs for a smaller sample. So these individuals had to be in this contained healthcare system where we were able to get service utilization costs. So we had data for 32 experimental folks, 41 controls. And what we were able to find is that the emergency department costs went down 40% among the experimental group. And we think that's because the nurse practitioner really let them know how accessible she would be. She gave them her home phone number, her cell phone number, and made herself available, so that we think that may have resulted in less use of the emergency department. But a little bit of a paradox, some other healthcare costs rose, like especially the costs associated with referrals to specialists. So the nurse practitioner was in part supposed to fill in that puzzle of healthcare, and that often meant this person has skin cancer and has not seen a doctor in 5 years, I'm going to find that person for him. So that's the paradox, better coordination, better attention, some of the healthcare costs went up. So we did qualitative interviews with 28 mental health service recipients, so the clients, who were very much similar to the larger sample of individuals, very disabled, mostly on SSDI and SSI, taking medications for the most part. We did interviews as well with 10 providers and administrators, and we used qualitative methods to record, transcribe, and code the data. So we really wanted to look at mostly the barriers to healthcare from the person's perception, the individuals getting services. And not surprisingly, the lack of transportation to specialty care and the access to specialty care were very big problems for individuals. The distance to care, so if a person lived 20 miles outside of Boston and the specialist was in Boston, it was a very insurmountable kind of problem to deal with. The lack of coverage for some routine dental and eye care and for specialty care, docs that wouldn't take public insurance, is probably the biggest barrier that individuals face. And I think Massachusetts is finally going to try to start doing something about dental care. It was a huge problem. Most dentists did not want to take public insurance, and if they did, we don't know what kind of job they really were doing. And so this is a huge quality of life issue, but it also leads to other health problems for individuals. Eye care, similarly, and then specialty care, especially around cancer, for example, a lot of doctors could pick and choose who they took for patients and did not want to deal with individuals with very severe mental illness. And the communication with and between medical professionals. A lot of individuals reported feeling stigmatized waiting in the waiting room. They felt different. They felt like they couldn't get out all their issues, you know, quickly when they went to see the doctor, almost like they needed an advocate or a support with them to really get their healthcare needs addressed and met and explained. I think I'm going to skip this slide in the interest of time and talk a little bit about the most significant barriers from the administrators and providers. What I can say overall is the agencies loved having the nurse practitioner handy. It was so seamless. It was so collaborative. But on the other hand, there were some issues around the finances. The cost of hiring the nurse practitioner and the support staff that she needed in her office were quite expensive. And there was not a lot of insurance reimbursement for the services of the nurse practitioner. I'm not exactly sure about which services were reimbursable, but they were not reimbursable as a physician would get reimbursed. So that presented also challenges. And at the same time, the mental health budget was decreasing. So this idea that, well, maybe the mental health system should take over healthcare for individuals because other people can't handle it, well, there are going to be challenges in the mental health system if they try to take over physical healthcare. And then the staff, they also reported loving it. They loved having someone there that they could go to. They felt unable to deal with a lot of these physical issues themselves. But we also heard from staff that says, if I have to take care of this person's living situation and their mental health care and their psychotropic meds, and now you're saying I got to take care and worry about their physical health too, how much can I really be doing? That was really more of a minority, but for a couple of individuals who were very physically sick and were mentally ill, that was a big burden for the mental health care providers, and it was something we didn't really expect going in. Most mental health providers don't feel competent at all to address physical health issues, so they need help, either training, education, or this kind of collaborative model. So our conclusions at the end of this well-executed five-year study that involved 200 individuals and lots of resources was that access to primary care alone does not change health behaviors or health. It was quite disappointing to see how much effort had to go into trying to help people address their healthcare issues with very modest outcomes, I will say modest. Changing health behaviors and outcomes is extremely difficult in individuals with healthcare issues and mental health conditions. I think if you're dealing just with healthcare conditions, it's one set of problems, but you're talking about people who have really two huge burdens in life to bear, and trying to address both of those is really difficult. Trying to get individuals who are so stupefied by their medication to think about going to exercise or planning meals, it's really challenging. The integrated approach that was accomplished by having a nurse practitioner in the mental health setting was highly valued by clients and also by staff and administrators who saw great value in the seamless communication about the health needs of their clients, but also something of an added burden. Primary care providers need more training about how to deal with individuals who have severe mental illness. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but it is something that's needed. We need systemic change to address the intersection of health and mental health, broader coverage, co-location of services, transportation options, and healthy lifestyle options. Well, how we were doing this study, we were recruiting in a day treatment center in Massachusetts, and you think of Massachusetts as being somewhat forward-thinking. But when I saw what they served for lunch, I thought, oh my God, you know, the food was not fit for human consumption, really, and it was everything that you would not want a person with diabetes or pre-diabetes to eat. It was interesting that there's just not a real focus on physical health, nutrition, and wellness in most programs for people with mental illness. And for true integration of health and mental health care, we need system-wide change. We need something that comes from the departments of mental health down, not these isolated pockets of studies. And we need training to enhance the competencies of mental health care specialists in the area of physical health care if they're willing. So they'll all know what an A1-3C is. Thank you very much.